Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. My name is Keegan McNally. I'm on Twitter at @half_hockey, at my website half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. Shang, if you can see him on your screen, if you're watching on YouTube, is at an airport lounge leaving Las Vegas after the draft. So he's going to be kind of a little bit quieter this episode as he tries to speak through his mic. I have made it home out of Las Vegas, but we had an exciting 2 days at the draft that both Shang and I were at. We have tons and tons of analysis and news and stuff to talk about the different picks that the Sharks made and what went into some of those picks, as well as our grades related to them. We're also going to go over our free agent targets and possibly some predictions for tomorrow, which is crazy that the free agent class has already started, but here it is. Shang, why don't you say hi and explain your situation a little bit?
Well, I am in an airport lounge, and so I'm trying to talk quietly. I'm going to be talking a little ASMR, so hope you guys enjoy that. And hopefully my leaving Las Vegas isn't like the movie and not the same end as that movie.
Yeah, and hopefully, like, unlike a lot of people who are on Twitter, you can actually leave Las Vegas. I got lucky enough that I got out of there in time, but a lot of people are stuck again, which is the thing that all the NHL GMs and executives complained about that in Nashville, and it's happening again. So I don't know. The dream of a not decentralized draft may be dead, but we'll see. Let's start with the draft, because it was a lot of... I don't know. I guess our first reactions would be a good place to start. I thought it was a huge success for the NHL as a whole, and something that I'm happy that I was a part of, but I'm a little sad that it's going away. It was just a spectacle that I did not expect the NHL to pull off so well, because the NHL often doesn't pull off things like that without a hitch, and they kind of did. I mean, there's a few things, but nothing major, it felt like. I don't know about you, Shane.
Well, I think that they lost money on it, and I think that as cool as it looked, I don't quite... If you had asked me, if I was in marketing, you asked me the cost of renting the Sphere, of renting Sphere, and yeah, as opposed to what people pay that to get in to see this, was it worth it? I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if there's a business case for it. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But what I heard in the days leading up to it, it was the expectation was that they would lose money on it. But I could be wrong about that part of it. But it was very cool inside. Yes, it was. But again, do you need that to see Macklin Celebrini's face in 360? I'm not sure.
I guess need isn't the right word. Maybe need and isn't the right word, you know?
Also, too, and as we talked about at the draft, all I care about is my work, which is why I'm talking to you guys right now in an airport lounge and try to keep my voice low. All I care about is my work. And so at Sphere, the Wi-Fi was terrible.
Oh,
supposedly,
it was.
James Dolan, I guess, he blocks AT&T from getting signal inside. So that's what matters to me. I don't really care about what it looks like on TV. I don't care about about the panorama. I'm a grouch about it, you know. So I will say though that,
go ahead,
you know, that kind of 360 planet, you know, planetarium experience all around, right? It'll be ultra cool if I was watching like Oppenheimer or a really good movie like The Martian, right? That, you know, with a great plot but also a great visuals, Gravity, right? Something like that would be awesome there. Again, you know, seeing Trevor Connolly's mug in 360.
But you get to dream about punching him. Anyway. I think one of the things that was pretty interesting or could be a cool idea is if like what here's what I would want to watch. I would want to watch like you put a camera on a hockey player's helmet. And you do that for like a bunch of players on the team. And you watch a first person hockey game at the Sphere with like, you can see the ice all around you. Yeah, and you're watching hockey. Like, I don't know. That sounds fun as shit. And also like mute the mic so you can hear like players chirping at each other and yelling at each other.
I agree with that, but that's not what we got at Sphere. So
no, that was not. But I do think it was cool. It was cool. I will say that overall, but yeah, it was definitely something where they could have lost money on because it's probably very expensive to be in that environment. But they did sell 14,000 seats, so not bad. More than your normal draft, right? Probably.
I'm not sure, but I think Sphere is very expensive. They kicked us out at 1:30 p.m. sharp. Literally like an hour after the last pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were like, get out. It's closed.
Yeah, please, exactly. Please. Yeah.
They were not very, they did not give us any leeway there at all.
I think there was another event, but still, though, I'm sure it was very expensive. So, yeah, it's not, there wasn't late checkout there. That's me. Yeah.
I would do it again if they had it there. I think it's interesting to go to, but yeah, the Wi-Fi did suck. It was not good. It was hard to load tweets or like even tweet things out from inside of it. It was pretty bad, but we did get to watch Jumbo Joe Thornton announce a Macklin Celebrini pick on stage, which awesome from a fan perspective. I loved it so much. Let's move into our draft day grades, right?
Okay.
This is the thing that everybody rushes to get out immediately as soon as the last pick is done. They're like, who won the draft? What was the team that won the draft? And I'm not going to say universally, but pretty much universally, the Sharks were in the winners category from this draft.
Yeah.
Like on all of the articles that I read, basically everyone says the Sharks did very, very well. And I agree. I think they did extremely well overall. What do you think?
Yeah, I had an article how the rest of the league grades the Sharks draft. And I gave it an A, and I spoke with, I think, three scouts in it, I think, three NHL scouts, other teams than the Sharks, that all gave it an A. And not just because they picked Macklin Celebrini, which is an easy way to start to get an A in a draft, but the other picks too. And so what we're going to talk about here is my grades, revisit them, debate them, but also hear Keegan's grades, which we haven't heard. And we know Keegan liked the draft, but let's go pick by pick and see what Keegan thinks. Take it away.
I love it. Here was my funniest thing, and I don't know how to get this to really be done on camera. Back with Celebrini, all over the place was like A+. You know, like every single article that you read, except for Corey Prodman's. Corey Prodman gave the Macklin Celebrini pick a B+. Why?
What?
I have no fucking idea. He doesn't even explain it in his article. It could be a typo. I don't know. Go ahead.
I did hear this fascinating argument though for Demidov as a number one pick, which it came from Russian people. So there might be some bias there, but the argument is that Celebrini plays such a structured, correct game that he doesn't have Demidov's creativity, and that Demidov will maybe ultimately score more points than a Celebrini. And you know, the argument is that Demidov has a higher ceiling than a Celebrini. And these are from people that actually think Demidov is better than Michkov. So it's an argument. No, it's not weird. It's an argument that, you know, okay. And they like Celebrini. I think it's just that Demidov to them is one and Celebrini is two.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess.
We'll see.
But I have a lot of doubts in my mind based on their styles of play. I think Celebrini's the total package, and I would not risk that for Demidov, who still has a chance to not be that too. So
it was a bit of a drunken argument. So
yeah, a little bit. And who knows? Maybe they're right. But yeah, that was the only person I could find that gave that not like an A+. And
that's really weird. But what was your grade?
It was a typo, or I have no idea. My grade for that is an A+. There's no better pick. There's no better time to get the pick. There was no question they were going to pick somebody else, and they make Jumbo Joe Thornton select the pick, the best player in Sharks history, and he's passing the torch. It felt special. So A+, no notes, basically, is what I would say. I don't have another grade.
Yep. And mine's was A+ too. So just no debate there. So maybe we'll debate on the later other ones, but.
Yeah, I'll read yours off too while we go through.
Yeah, okay.
So this was the pick, and this is the one that's gonna be like, if there was the Michkov versus Smith debate, it's Dickinson versus Booyam this year. And it was very surreal being at the draft when these picks were happening, because it didn't match up with mostly anybody's predictions. Like, there were so many twists and turns in the top 15 that like people expected a lot of things, but until it actually happened, I was like, holy shit, I did not think it was going to be Beckett Seneca 3 or Berkey Catton going to Seattle or
right. Yakubchuk
going ahead of most of the other D-men. It didn't really make sense until it happened. And the Sharks being there with two of the better choices for like the franchise at D, I was like just like screaming in my brain, being like, please pick a defenseman. They're right there. Don't fuck this up. Please don't pick anybody else. Don't pick Constantine.
Don't pick Cole Iserman.
Don't pick Cole Iserman. Don't pick it. Just pick a fucking defenseman. And then as soon as they did, I was happy. That was my first reaction. I was like, thank God they picked somebody that like they needed to pick for the franchise's benefit rather than just big braining it, you know, because they could have definitely big brained that pick and they didn't. They actually brained it so good that they got to the exact spot to be able to pick one of them, which is amazing.
That was a great trade.
Looking back on it, it was like, yeah, both those guys probably would be gone at 14, and both those guys were there for you to pick from. And
it was a slight overpayment, but if you're going to move up to that part of the draft, as I did a whole story on that draft day trades, trading up to in the first, you always have to overpay. And the overpay was reasonable.
Yeah, there was no chance you were getting away with, like, I honestly think it was a little bit of, like, not that bad. Like, I thought maybe they had to give 33 to do it, and they didn't. So,
yeah.
A brilliant trade. I really, really enjoyed it. So, there's a lot of talk between Dickinson and Booyam. And, first of all, your grade for this was an A. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, and I'm going to put my stand on it that I like Dickinson. We'll see if I'm wrong, but that was my vote even before it happened. So,
and that's even over Booyam is what you're saying.
Yes, I prefer Dickinson's sort of well-rounded game. I suppose if everything hits for Booyam, he will be better, but Dickinson, it's safer, but also to Dickinson, it's not like Dickinson is a poor skater like Yakimchuk, and Dickinson has offensive potential and upside. I did get some pushback, and I know a lot of people think maybe Dickinson is kind of maybe a little topped out, but I'm going to go with, I think he's going to be a very good player, and I generally will go with the more rounded player, so I will pick Celebrini over Demidov, and I will pick Dickinson over Booyam.
I understand the argument, and I think it was funny because we went to the youth hockey clinic that the prospects put on like 2 days before the draft, and I was sitting there and I recorded a bunch of Dickinson just because he was in the same chair that Celebrini was going to be in, so I was just recording him, and I was listening to him talk, and I was like, this guy kind of seems like a Mike Greer pick, but I had no thought that he would be there at 11 or 14 at that point. I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm listening to him talk, but like, even though I think he's kind of a Mike Greer pick, doesn't
matter. What was Mikey Hockey about him?
Well, he's huge. Like, the guy, like, he's very built for a 18-year-old kid. Whereas guys like Booyam's a little slighter. Like, he's not skinny at all, but he's a little slighter, a little smaller. He just had that, like, not like pucks in deep mentality, but that, like, very, I'm focused on hockey and I love hockey, you know, that kind of mentality. When you listen to his answers. So, but it, in my brain, I did not think that Mike Greer would be in a position to take him, but he felt like a Mike Greer pick. But anyway, so I'm not mad about the pick because I do agree. Dickinson was still, I think, in my top 10. And if you're giving an A, I'll give it an A minus because it's not even okay. Like, I wouldn't give it a B because I think it was a good pick. It was one of the two best picks they could have made at that point.
Where was Booyam on your list? I forgot.
I think Booyam was in four on my list.
Four, okay. And Dickinson was what again?
I think he was nine or eight.
Okay.
So he was around the same area. But go ahead.
I did talk to a team that had a Dickinson. They liked Dickinson, but they had Dickinson later than 11. So I'll leave it at that because I can't give away too much about it. So that I just thought that was interesting. So there are teams that definitely like Booyam over Dickinson, but obviously Dickinson with his physical package and all that stuff, right? Like, there are teams like the Sharks who obviously like Dickinson over Booyam too, you know, the other way around. So I just think that's going to be a very interesting, like you said, interesting debate for Sharks fans in the coming years. It's interesting to see how both guys turn out.
There's debates used to be about like 6 foot one guys versus 5 foot 10 defenders or stuff like that. And now it's like, Booyam's 6 foot and he's like really strong and he's a, you know, good skater. And like, there's not a lot of flaws with him other than he's not 6'3", I guess.
Well, and he's, I think there's questions about him defensively. So I'm not going to say without flaw. So it's not just a size thing.
Neither is Dickinson. And I think actually watching them both, honestly, yes, Dickinson has a little bit more physicality, but Booyam's not a bad defender at all. And he is a good defender on a winning team repeatedly.
I'm not sure about that because I spoke with a scout when the Sharks acquired the number 11 pick, and he said that in his opinion, Booyam doesn't know how to play defense yet. He compared them to Parekh, and he said he thinks Parekh knows how to play but doesn't want to play it.
I would argue I would argue no. I mean, I would argue Parekh doesn't know, sure. And Booyam does. But
okay, yeah. Fair. But I'm just saying that. If that thought is out there, though, that how good Booyam understands defense, then that could be another reason why he fell. Yeah. Like, it's not just a simple size thing because Parekh is not that much larger, right? And Parekh went higher. So,
yeah,
It's not as simple.
There's
as
legitimate
that.
Questions about the way that Booyam creates offense. I think that's a legitimate argument too.
Offensive ceiling isn't as high as Parekh's, yeah.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah, he did have, again, the best statistical season for a defenseman in the NCAA ever by like a lot, by like a half a point per game or so, a quarter point per game. Like, it was a lot.
There's definitely an argument for Booyam. I'm not like saying like this is ridiculous, you know, right? So, yeah.
But I think that's why I'm not saying it's like a bad pick either because. Mm-hmm. Dickinson's still very good. I think it's there is a floor difference as well, right? Because Booyam could never make it in a legitimate capacity other than like he's an offensively gifted third liner that we've seen a billion of them in the NHL and they don't do anything. It's possible that's a route for him. Whereas Dickinson, I really don't think there's any other route besides the top four defensemen.
Definitely the floor is higher.
I think there's a very, very good chance he's a top four defense in the NHL. I think there's a higher chance that Booyam's a first line defender, but
that's fair.
But the Sharks really couldn't afford that risk, right? Like, if Booyam busts for the Sharks, like, they're screwed in terms of their defensive depth.
I'll disagree with that. They could have. I think they just like Dickinson more. He's higher on their list. So
that's all they
said.
We tried to get them to nail down that, and they said he's higher on the list.
I know there are specifics to it that why he was higher, but
of course,
I don't think it's one of those like things that like, because Dickinson can bust too. There's plenty of guys that skate well, big, you know, they come out, looks like they're surefire, like NHLers, right? At least, and they just don't make it for this reason or another, right? So I don't think it's about that. I think that they just, maybe they don't like Bouillon as much in terms of his ceiling. They don't think he'll reach it, as likely to reach it, but they like Dickinson. I think it's as simple as that. And I think it's a, you know, it's a credible debate either way. So,
yeah, I don't think it's a, it's definitely not worth being angry about, I think, is the thing.
Yeah, I agree. If they're two good picks. They didn't pick, Stolberg there, or which I without any sort of backup suspected for a second. They didn't pick Yzerman there when they could have got him. You know, we saw where Yzerman went. So they picked a really excellent prospect in lower than expected place. You can't complain about that.
Yeah. He's going to be a very good defender for a very long time, I think. And so I'm giving it an A-. Only because I can't give it an A. If you gave it an A, and I think you, I would pick somebody else. And I'm not giving it a B because they didn't pick somebody I don't like, or a C. You know, the more interesting bit was Bouillon actually falling one more pick, essentially because Philadelphia traded back out of 12 to take Jet Luchenko at 13, and Bouillon got to 12 by Minnesota.
And Philly, I guess, clearly wasn't as infatuated with Bouillon either. So,
yeah, I was reading an article on that. I guess Bouillon's agent is the same agent as Cutter Gauthier. And maybe Philly was like, we don't want to get burned again.
That's fair.
So maybe
fair.
When Dickinson was gone at that
point. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading an article. I don't remember who wrote it, but it was why this is a possibility of why they didn't go with Bouillon, even though he's a very good draft pick. It's like, hey, they just got burned by that guy's agent. Like, so because they had said a whole reason why they were like, oh, we have the Philadelphia did, we have, you know, guys of a certain size on our blue line, and it didn't make sense to add another one like Bouillon if all of our guys are small. But I don't know, tough to say. They really liked Jet Luchenko, which I'm going to give myself a pat on the back for tooting the Jet Luchenko horn for like 5 months. Mm-hmm. And then goes top 13, which still blows my mind. I personally don't think he's that good. So after like tooting, you know, like blowing the Jet Luchenko horn forever, I don't think he was top 13 good, but what can you do? Philadelphia really liked him. Anyway, they are extremely upset about the whole way it went down, Philadelphia fans. So. We're not in their shoes, right? Because like, we could have passed up again, Dickinson or Bouillon for God knows who, Jet Luchenko, and we'd be like, why did what?
Or Stolberg, yeah.
Yeah, Stolberg or Adam Juracek or something, and we'd be scratching our heads wondering what we left on the board. So I'm happy. Those first two picks were like perfect for the draft. I couldn't have been happier for them. So we concluded day one and got to day two very early in the morning. I will say the Sharks, we had asked them before at the end of day one if there was a chance they could trade that pick, and it was we'll see what the offers are like, and it turned out they said screw it, we're not. And they basically wasted no time and chose Igor Chernyshov with the 33rd overall pick. You gave this pick an A grade as well.
Yeah.
So similar to the Dickinson.
Yeah, I mean, it's a first round talent. If he had gone into high teens, no one would have batted an eye. Yep. He reminds me of the Quentin Musty, Kasper Haltinen pick, a bet on offensive upside.
Yeah.
If you guys have read a scout that I talked to about, Chernyshov says that I can't state how bad he is. I can't overstate how bad he is at defense, is what one scout told me. But as JD likes to say, the defense is for nerds, and you can learn defense too, and you can learn to be a adequate defender and that sort of thing. And so the offense part, it's harder to teach. And so yeah, it's a terrific upside bet. And when he is on, you know, power forward type with skate, skill, all that kind of stuff, right? And so, yeah, I love all of that.
Yeah, the I would also give this pick an A. I wouldn't change a thing other than he was the best, one of the best value picks that was available at that stage. I think, like you said, similar to Quentin Musty, you're betting on upside with him, and you're betting that the total package comes together in 2-3 years, and you have a dominant scoring winger. And it's not like it's a reach and being like an impossibility. It's like a very realistic path, you know? And I liked the bet on upside there. With the 33rd overall pick.
Yeah, and at that area of the draft too, which is what one scout observed to me, you see in articles that the high pick areas that the Sharks do value that upside. Even Dickinson may not be Bulliam's upside, but still a lot of upside there. And then we talk about Musty, Halton, and Chernyshov with the high picks that they have kind of shown a leaning toward that in that area of the draft.
Yeah. And all of these guys aren't going to work out, but maybe one or two does, and then that's all you need, really, around your core pieces, like your Macklins and everything. So, I have no issue with the pick. I think an A is a good grade. I only chose Badinka for my specific draft because the half wall hockey sharks, because I needed more size on my blue line, because my blue line was Zeef Bulliam and Lane Hutson and Luca Cagnoni. And I was like, I need a big defender, or else there's no, and he's the best one that was there. And I really like Badinka. So, and I don't really need that many more scoring wingers because I have a shit ton on the team. So, at Michkov and all that. So,
yeah.
Made sense for me to go with Badinka, but I think for the Sharks, Chernyshov makes a lot of sense. So, love it. A for me as well. And then one of my favorites got picked at 53. Not favorites, but one of my like guys that I mentioned before on our pre-draft show, Leo Salamalenius, got picked at 53 for the Sharks.
Okay. Well, we're going to have a little debate here then.
You picked a B yes. For the grade.
Yes.
Go ahead.
You go first.
I would go with like a B+.
Oh, okay.
Not like a super. I mean, at that stage, maybe B+, A-, because it was starting to fall pretty quickly, the guys that were available. So maybe B+, A-. I really like Leo Salamalenius. I think there's not a, like, he does a lot of things correct. I don't know if the actual like highest ceiling is there, and I think his offense might be limited in the next level, but I think he has a lot of tools, and he has enough of a safe floor that I think at that point in the second round, you're getting a solid NHL prospect out of him. So yeah, I think it's a good bet for a Sharks team that needs more solid defensive prospects.
Yeah, I think for me, I think at that phase in the draft, I can still be a little more ceiling. So Polkanen, what next? And he would have been fun.
Oh, yeah,
he's 6'6", he can skate. And so I think that would have been an interesting pick there. So I no issue with the Salamalenius pick. And like you said, at that point, some of the better names were coming off the board. But Polkanen, I think, would have been a fun one. And just a couple other names I'm looking at too that would have been fun. But that's it though. It's still an excellent pick though.
Yeah, Polkanen would be super fun. That's a bet on like super upside.
6'6", 220, sure. Can skate, it has offense. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a fun pick there, fun value. I think I went with Teddy Stiga for mine, so I did also pick like an upside pick because he's an offensive scoring winger.
Maxim Massey was on the board too. Yeah, so
yeah. Oh, an interesting tidbit about the draft, and I tweeted about this was the, and I don't know if anybody's written an article about it or not, but this was the lowest the QMJHL has had their first pick picked ever since the QMJHL was founded in 1969. And that was
that Massey?
No, it was Spencer Gill at pick 59.
That was Massey went 66 third round. Actually, with the Sharks pick, or the Sharks' original third round pick.
Yeah, so 59% ago. The second one was number 45 in the year 2000. So
interesting.
Almost every other year, there was either a first round QMJHLer. You know, they've got some like superstar ones, like Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Vinny LeCavalier, like, you know, superstar players. or just like regular first rounders or early seconds, 59 is the lowest ever. And it kind of speaks to the QMJHL's strength over the past few drafts because it's been very poor. It's been noticeably bad for a few years now. So,
yeah,
interesting little tidbit there. But so the Sharks' next pick was pick 82. Carson Wetch, right winger, 6'2", 6'1", 2. Described as like a high energy guy, skates well, competes hard, hits, fights, does it all, can play penalty kill. I had watched, well, do you want to, your grade first was a B minus for this.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think that on one hand, you look at what his ceiling is and you think, oh, don't want to spend a third round pick on that because he's not necessarily going to be a second line player or better. But the things that he brings, that sort of agitator rat mentality, and he's going to stand up for his teammates and all that kind of stuff, right? A scout I spoke with compared him to Brendan Lemieux before the draft, not favorably, by the way. And so Brendan hasn't had a great career.
Is he going to bite anybody?
Hopefully not. But remember with Brendan Lemieux, though, that Brendan Lemieux was a second round pick. And so this these kind of elements are very, very valued. And so if Wesh is a little better than a Brendan Lemieux, because Brendan Lemieux is still a competent fourth line player, right? If Wesh can get himself into that third, fourth line area and with all his attributes, that's a super valuable player. And so I'm not as down on the pick as I know some people just look at the points and whatever. Oh, this is a D pick. This is a C, whatever, right? It's an F pick because you didn't pick the smallest, most offensively gifted player available at this spot in the draft. But I think, yeah, so I think it's a good pick overall. But for sure, though, that yeah, maybe there's some more ceiling there. You know, Luca Morelli went over there, and that's a guy that some people had in the second round there. But anyway, what'd you think?
At the time, I didn't have much to think about it other than I think B minus is about right. Maybe C plus. I think they did obviously sacrifice maybe a home run swing on some people. I really liked one guy that was around that spot that I'm surprised was still available was Adam Dzeko.
Yeah, Shervin too, the defenseman.
Shervin was available. Dzeko went 95, but he's like a super big scoring winger. He's 6'5". I really liked his game, but I actually saw a lot of Carson Wetch during the season. And I remember when we were at the draft, I remember going back and looking at my reports and I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. I should have pegged him as a Mike Greer guy because I just wrote like all of the things that, you know, Mike Greer has talked about, competitive, physical, penalty kill.
Yes. Skates.
Skates well.
Yeah. Yep.
So some of these guys, when they get a little bit more offensive talent, can, you know, stick higher in the lineup, but I don't know if it's all there for him. He might end up just like a fourth line, you know, energy guy.
Right. But
I think they were, I said this a lot too. I think at a certain point, this draft started to fall off pretty quickly. And they were kind of like, well, this guy seems very, I'll call it safe for lack of a better word, of what he's going to be in the NHL. So I wasn't mad about it. C plus B minus is where I'm going to stick with.
Okay.
I chose Anthony Romani for mine. Anybody cares? Mm-hmm. he was the re-entry, like 6'1", scoring winger. Put up a bajillion points to the OHL in his overage season. Or not overage, but his undrafted. Or his D plus 1 year. I've had my eye on him for a while. I thought he was going to go in the next couple picks, so I was like, oh, I got to pick him now. But he ended up going like a round later. But anyway. Mm-hmm. But still, not a bad pick for the Sharks. Next few picks are interesting. Kristen Kirsch at number 116. Mm. 6'3", Swiss netminder that you gave a C plus to.
Yeah, that's my lowest grade. And I thought about that hard because this is a thing where goaltending is voodoo, so you can't really be hard on the Sharks for not picking a guy that was on everybody's list. And also, too, this goaltending class was considered very weak in general. So sure. I do like that the Sharks didn't reach for a guy like at, say, 53 just because, oh, we needed a goalie. We have nobody in the system. And so you reach for somebody that you don't really like. And Chris Marhaus did say that Kirsch was their number one goalie on their board, which I do tend to believe because we didn't ask him about it. He just offered it. And maybe he was trying to defend the pick in some kind of way because he knew that this is a kind of a it was off
number one goalie people's left board. Or like total?
No, I think on their list.
Wow.
And but goaltending is voodoo, right? So you don't I didn't judge that hard. And sure. I think so. I guess it's possible he could have meant left on the board, but I actually think maybe. He meant overall. And anyway, so if they got their guy, then I give them full credit for that. But I hadn't heard of him. I give it a little lower grade there. And at that spot too, you know, later we're gonna get to another goalie pick, but it's in the seventh round. So
sure.
You know, grading on a curve, you know, you're not going to grade a seventh round pick as harshly as you would a fourth round pick, right? And so, you know, at that spot, they could have maybe still got a credible kind of skater prospect. But mm-hmm. for what it's worth, though, there was kind of a run on goaltending. There was that first run of goaltending in, I think, the 50s and 60s, right?
Yep.
70s. And then this was a kind of a later run, right? Because Kirsch came third in a run of three consecutive goalie picks, 114 Kemp to Washington, 115 Gamzin to the Islanders, and 116 Kirsch to the Sharks. So the Sharks responded to that in their way too. It's pick them before they lost them, which is good too.
I'm giving it a B. Solid
okay,
B.
Fair.
I think he's a credible goalie prospect.
Your boy Kiviharu was there though at 122.
Yeah, he was.
To Minnesota Sharks, again too.
Sharks really, really needed a goaltender, and I don't know. I can talk about it at some point too. But the theme of this year's draft was definitely size, and there was a lot of players that dropped a ton based on their size, and then players that were undrafted, again, based on their size, at least a little bit. So I think it was just not the right year to be trying to grab him. But 122 is super low for Kiviharju. Anyway, I would give it a B for the Sharks organization specifically. Okay. I think they needed a credible goalie prospect, and he's at that pick, not a bad pick.
Okay.
I think we also had mentioned Gidloff at that point.
Right, Gidloff went in the 140s, right? Yeah.
So,
but that's how random the goaltending is, or even the board this year, because I think Gidloff was top for Pronman, and I think in a couple mocks I saw he had Gidloff going in the second round, right? And not to say that Pronman is definitive or whatever, but that's just like how random, like, because you're not going to see, like, for example, like a Celebrini, it's anonymous. Some guys are it's not anonymous, unanimous. So like even Chernyshov, right? Chernyshov is a first rounder, and if there's any drop, it's the low seconds, and that's predictable, right? So, but goaltending so weird that for one guy, Gidloff is a second round pick, and for another guy, well, ultimately for the NHL, Gidloff was a fifth round pick. So,
and if you asked anybody, I don't goaltending think they would say that Ilya Nabokov would go 38th overall
right.
to start.
38th overall, the first goalie, right? And I mean, there was no run. I think it's just like, wow, what? And then the next goalie went, I think, 15 picks later, right? I think it was Carter George next, right? So
no, Yegorov went 11 picks later.
Oh, I'm 49. Sorry. Okay. And then George, yeah. So.
Yeah, and then George and Emil Finney went after that. Mm. So I think it was good of them not to get so married, like you said, to a goalie that they took him 53 overall or whatever.
Yeah.
They stuck to their board in some way to weigh the options between, like, how likely is it even that this goalie prospect works, and
right.
how likely,
as opposed to a Selin Wolanius. Yeah.
Yeah. So I liked where they picked the goalie, and also getting a goalie the most, that I'm going to give them a B overall.
Sure.
Colton Roberts got a B from you. He was picked number 131.
Yes.
I like Colton Roberts. I think I'm not going to disagree with you on this at all. I'm going to give him a B.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can almost discuss 131 and 143 together, because you're talking about bigger defenseman that, you know, I think skate well. And if they hit for you, they're not going to be first pairing defensemen, obviously, but they're sure. going to be a good part of a winning team. I think the plus for Roberts is that he was, I think he was like 80 something on Bob McKenzie's final rankings, which is rankings pulled or culled from 10 NHL scouts. So yeah. it's a good sense of how the rest of the league views these players. And so Roberts just kind of fell there. So to get him at 131, I think is very, very solid.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who Roberts reminds me of, like when I've seen him before, but I don't know if boring's the right word, but he's just kind of there. And then I think it's people have mentioned is like, if it all works out, he's kind of like a shutdown D man that has a little bit of physicality. He can do a little bit of puck moving, but, I don't know. Boring is the right way to put it. Maybe boring is the same word as B. So, or say it starts with B. So we're giving it a B for boring. but if at 131 and 143, it's like these guys are big humans and they don't handle the puck.
Low 6'4". Right.
And like handle the puck okay enough. Roberts can skate well enough. Miski, maybe. But I think they are both have potential if they are round out their game enough, basically.
Right.
So B for boring. And our last pick of the draft is Yaroslav.
But it could be W for winning, so.
Yeah. Or, I got nothing. At pick 194, we have Yaroslav. I'm never going to say it correctly. Korostilov. And if you're asking
why don't you know
how to pronounce that so well, it's because he was completely unranked by every single scouting service.
I don't think anybody would know how to say his name unless they're Russian there. So that's okay.
A classic seventh-round pick. But you gave it a B, and you also had a scout quote that I think is interesting, which called him
an
underrated goalie.
Yeah, Korostelov dealt with injuries last year. That's why he only played 22 games. Mm-hmm. And he is actually on the smaller side, so he's actually 6'1", which is small for a goalie these days. But Morehouse said he was second or third under board, which makes it, I think that was a total board because...
Yeah, must be.
Yeah, and so if you get that guy in a seventh-round pick, even if nobody's heard of him or whatever, it doesn't matter. So you get like a guy you like a lot in the seventh round in any position, I think, that's you're ecstatic and so I think that's excellent. I can't argue with that, so
yeah,
that's why I have it rated higher, or I'm sorry, that's why my grade is higher than with Kirsch, because with Kirsch in that position there are still potential players there, not just Kiviharu but other guys, right? But you know, Justin Poirier I think was on the board still, right? Just for example, sure. Just throw out another name. But in the seventh round, though, there's less legit players, kind of less legit prospects, skaters, right? Skaters are pretty pick clean, and goaltending is a good that's a good place to invest in the goalie, because goaltending is so everybody's list is very different for goaltending probably, and so that's a place where it's sort of a I don't know exploit a inefficiency in to some degree. So
agreed. It's the time to whip out your scratch offs and start scratching off really hard. You know, if you've got 6 7th round picks, just choose 6 goalies. Who gives a shit? Maybe one of them will work out. You know, I think it's interesting. The I think Byron Bader tweeted this out. Maybe it was somebody else, but like the lack of CHL goalies. Like, there's a lot of Euro goalies that are getting picked nowadays in the draft rather than CHL. And a lot of people have theories of why, but I think the biggest issue is goalies tend to develop later, and you don't retain the CHL rights on goalies for very long. You retain it for like 2 years after your draft. So a guy like Ryerson Leenders, for example, which was a goaltender that was still available at that pick, he got picked like 10 picks later or whatever, but they didn't choose him. They chose this unknown Russian goaltender because they're going to retain his rights for indefinitely, essentially. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting to think about just for the
future. That's true. That's a good point.
Because if Ryerson Leenders like doesn't completely, you know, pan out in the next 2 years, a team has to decide, do we keep investing time and effort into him or not, you know?
Right. And then with Kirsch, Kirsch's path is set Green Bay and then college. So then you have a finite time with him too, a very defined time with him. Whereas, again, yeah, the second goalie you pick in a draft, you can kind of let that clock run a bit.
Yeah, they can go for as long as they want, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no deadline. Linders got picked at 219 to Buffalo, by the way. Anyway. All right, that concluded the draft. And overall, I'm giving the Sharks an A.
Okay.
That's what I'm giving it.
I gave it an A, too. I didn't want to be a contrarian and give it, say A- or something like that just to be too cool for school. So I gave it a solid A.
I liked the strategy, I think, the best thing, right? Like, they had specific guys that they targeted, like the Dickinson. They moved up to get into the spot to take a guy like Dickinson or whoever was there. I liked the strategy of, you know, the big defenders that are not, like, complete shutdown guys, have no offense at all. I liked the goaltending picks and where they were picked. And then the one, you know, safest bet that they chose was Carson Wetch at 82, which seems to be their MO, right? Like the Svoboda thing we talked about at the draft was also in the third round. And they're just trying to get a player out of it, I think.
That's like, I mean,
a super high pick, but, you know.
I mean, I think these things are very, very flexible. So I don't think that next year they're going to repeat this pattern. But they did kind of, funny enough, follow some patterns here with the Halton and Musty in the late first, early second, using a third round pick on sort of a grinder type, but a guy that can help you win games, like potentially a playoff caliber winning grinder. So that's kind of interesting.
And then
fourth round, later rounds are kind of defensive swings, right? Last year was maybe a little smaller defense like Polkamp and Cagnoni, but nonetheless, they're kind of defensive swings.
Yeah, they went with a little more size this year, and that was a theme for sure. But it was good. I liked the strategy overall. And this year they also said, fuck it, we need two goalies, and they chose two goalies. So happy about that because there's no goalie prospect in the system. So happy there's two guys to look out for now.
Makes my job
a little bit more fun, you know, because there was nobody to watch for a little while there. It was just the old highlights of Ben Gaudreau and seeing if Mason Pope is around. But anyway, I'm going to get an A. All right, real quick, because you have to get on a plane soon. We're gonna
go
into our free agent talk. Free agency starts 12 hours from now, I think. Maybe something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, I'll be up bright and early soon. So.
You had run down basically where the Sharks at with their skaters and defensemen and goaltenders based on the trades that have happened and the acquisitions that have happened in the past week, which is a lot. We didn't really get into that, but they did acquire Jake Walman, Afanasyev,
Grundstrom, Delandria, and obviously Gaudreau.
Delandria and Gaudreau. So, and we did talk about those two. We did talk about Delandria and Gaudreau before we went to the draft. But
he kind of went with the same profile, though. Grundstrom is sort of the similar profile of player. And then on defense, Mike has seemed to talk more about puck moving, need more puck moving, and Walman fits that. And so kind of in terms of what I'm looking at with the way that I see the Sharks roster now, I think that it would be advisable for them to add now let's move beyond just the grinder type guys, right? I think suddenly your bottom six actually looks pretty decent now. So maybe some scoring, which Mike has alluded to too. So it's not me kind of making something up. And I think they could still use another puck moving defenseman to kind of, again, push Mara Ferraro down a little bit in the lineup, which I've talked about. And so I think these would be the most ideal things, one or two scorers and defensemen. And obviously the Sharks had limitations that they are still in the rebuild, so they're not going to match whatever Jake Ensel's getting. They're not likely to get a Brady Shea. He would be a dream guy, a perfect guy for their defense, but they're not likely to be able to reel a guy like that in, so we have to be reasonable about it. But anyway, so those are sort of the what I have in mind. So one scorer or two, and a defenseman who also kind of fulfill the other parts that I mentioned. They're good in the room. They're guys that you want around your young guys around your Celebrinis and company too.
Yeah, the issue is rapidly becoming the market is thinning, I'll say.
Right, especially on defense, right?
Yeah, we mentioned two guys on our last show about this a couple weeks ago, DeMelo and Carrier. No, three guys, Carrier, Chatfield, and DeMelo. All three of them have re-signed with the teams that, that were before they got to free agency. So, whoops. They're not available. I mean, Mike Greer even mentioned that getting Wallman helps.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we get one. I think it's more likely that we go after some sort of winger that can bring a little bit of physicality plus scoring.
Right. Those are a little more available.
Yeah, slightly more. And we also don't have a lot of that many spots left in terms of skaters. I think one more or two, maybe. Mm-hmm. And that's it before we start waiving guys that we've already acquired or having to
trade. Right. Or like a guy like Gushin's going to, it is going to have a tough time to crack a lineup if you bring in a scorer or two, but I think the lineup really does need it though. So Gushin will have to take a job from somebody in the top nine. So.
Yeah. It's, we'll see. Training camp's a long way away.
Yeah.
All right, so guys that we've mentioned that could be available, Jake DeBrusk.
Well, guys that fit, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So. Guys that will be available, I guess, in terms of their contract because they're free agents and maybe. Right, yes. Fit.
Yeah, I don't know if all these guys fit, but.
Anthony Mantha, Stefan Nason, David Perron, Daniel Sprong, Jeff Skinner.
This is a little list that I made of guys who can score. That's all.
Steven Stamkos.
That's not going to happen. Pipe dream.
Chandler Stevenson, Tarasenko, and Toivo Teravainen. You had mentioned to me off the air that Teravainen was your favorite one out of this list.
Yeah. He's sort of the best guy here that might be realistic.
Sure.
I guess let's talk about the list really fast and then let's close out with some predictions and then so I can get on my flight. But so not sure if guys like Tarasenko, like Duclair. I know Duclair is popular, but I don't know if they're necessarily, you know, Duclair is well liked by his teammates, but I don't know if he is as liked by the coaching staff, right? I don't know if Duclair is not just picking on Duclair. Tarasenko, I think the same thing, and a couple other guys on this board too, that I wonder if they're the most ideal guys that you want around your young players at all times. Skinner's another guy that I question, even though obviously Skinner can score. I like Teravainen because Teravainen is not in the Stamkos caliber of player. He's not the Gensel caliber of a free agency option. But you can give him a pretty handsome offer, and he is competitive. He is two-way. I heard nothing, no kind of issue with him in the room or anything like that. And so I think that he has the ceiling to score 30 goals or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that he is, well, he's never scored 30, but he has put up a lot of points though in his career. So 25 goals and a lot of assists. And so he's probably the guy that I think is realistic that I like. So
I think that would be one of the better options in terms of
actually. Yeah, one of the better options for sure.
I think it will. I think it's going to end up being like Stefan Nason. I think that fits so.
I think that'll be a good one too. Yeah.
So many boxes for them. I'll predict Stefan Nason.
There's the physicality part. It's hard to predict from this list. I would say that if I were to predict a guy that kind of fits my, I think Atkinson, even though there's a lot of, you know, Mike said they did not try to trade for him and the Sharks did not try to pick him up after he got bought out. You know, they could have sidestepped the whole no trade list thing, but he's the type of player I like a lot though. I think the leadership, and he still skates well, and he has a great scoring history. So I think that with more playing time or whatnot, that wouldn't surprise me if he hit 20 with the Sharks, but if he doesn't want to come here, though, that'll be tough, though, because now he's been bought out, so he can go where he wants, right, for cheap.
Yeah.
DeBrus would be nice because he's a guy that can grow with the Sharks, but so I'll leave him on the list. And then Nason, like we talk about, is maybe more realistic. And then, Teravainen,
defense-wise, like we said, we've gotten a run on defenders re-signing with teams. So guys that you've put on a list of possibilities or might fit with the Sharks would be guys like Oliver.
Yeah, with a little more puck moving. Yeah.
Yeah. Ekman
Larson. Who can still defend.
He's had a resurgence in Florida. Mm-hmm. Mark Giordano, who's old, but could still want to play.
Still should be able to move a puck. Yeah, Matt Roy. Yeah,
Matt Roy, Sean Walker, and Nikita Zadorov. Three guys that are all still available. Zadorov being the pipest dream out of all of those, I think.
Yeah.
Because he's getting the old, like, 6x6 or something by a team, I think. But Sean Walker is an interesting one. Matt Roy and OEL, I think they're interesting options. I don't think that they get any of them. I think they don't sign a defenseman.
Okay. My prediction is this is totally not educated. So this is completely speculative, but I'm going to go with overall Teravainen and Giordano. So I think they get a big forward fish. Maybe they overpay him quite a bit, which they can afford, like 3 years, $21 million. Mm-hmm. They could do that. And they bring in Giordano for a year to get an extra year out of him, see if he can still play middle pairing minutes okay and move the puck a bit, which I think there's a good chance he can still. Mm-hmm. And so that's my prediction. Oh, and before we head out of here too, I do have a little bit of Sharks free agency news to end with too, but let's hear your predictions before we get to that.
Oh boy. I think they got like Stefan Nason and one more AHL NHL tweener of something like
okay.
that. And maybe like a AHL NHL tweener defender too. But I don't think it's going to be as big of a splash, but who knows? Mike Greer has surprised me many times, but I would say Stefan Nason seems so fit a lot for them. So I'm going to say him. An interesting thing before we get to the free agent news is there were a lot of smaller, less physical defenders like Brännström, Bean, Lundqvist, mm-hmm. all of which that did not get qualifying offers today as RFAs. So will be UFAs tomorrow. Do you think there's any shot that they go for these kind of smaller puck movers for tomorrow?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they brought in Addison to fill a specific role last year. He couldn't quite do it, but maybe one of these guys can. I don't think that Mike is allergic to small defenders. I know people think he is, but I don't think he is. So I think if one of these types can bring enough offense and defend competently enough, that there could be a spot. Obviously, there's going to be opportunity on the power play for one of these guys. So do you think they'll pick one of these up tomorrow? So that could be your defenseman that they pick up.
I think he's just allergic to the Kalen Addison mold of small defenseman now because he, mm-hmm. he experienced it and then so readily went nope. And a lot of these guys fill you know.
I think they can be better than Kalen though, right? I don't think the issue is that Kalen is small. The issue is that Kalen isn't good. That Kalen didn't bring enough offense either, right? He obviously did not defend well enough, but he didn't even bring enough offense.
So before he came to the Sharks, probably put up the most points in a season than any of these guys too.
That's fair, but that's true. But Kalen was on better teams arguably too, and more of opportunity. Kalen was like a PP1 for Minnesota for a while, right? So
yeah. So I don't know. I think Brännström would be an interesting one just because there's been a lot of like speculation that his role hasn't really progressed a lot with Ottawa, and maybe
right.
there's some untapped potential there if you do stick about a power play.
Right.
So that would be one I would go after, I think.
But, okay.
I don't think they will. But I'd be happy
fair
if
enough.
They
do. Yeah.
I think it'd be an interesting swing. The last one I want to mention was Nate Schmidt, who mm-hmm. got bought out. He's a not so much anymore a offensive D-man. He's kind of had a little bit of a fall from grace.
He was a very good defenseman back in Vegas. But yeah, I think that he's definitely lost something, or Winnipeg would keep him. He's Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Winnipeg needs guys. So,
but if you can get Nate Schmidt on the cheap, he did, you know, he could still maybe put up like 20 something points for you. And he does have some puck moving ability. So
sure. Sure.
It's an interesting thought because he's probably going to be pretty cheap after the buyout.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
All right, what's the news before we get you on your flight?
Just a small thing. So the Sharks had said, Mike Red at a press conference, he said that they were going to let, I think it was Carpenter, McDonald, and Bailey test free agency. Obviously, that didn't happen with Bailey because the Sharks signed Bailey today. Just as I mentioned that, you know, you kind of see what's out there, right? And obviously, all these guys want one-way contracts, but I don't know if it's there for them. And so Bailey took a two-way contract with the Sharks today. And so with Jacob McDonald, the news is that Jake McDonald is going to go to free agency. Small thing, but there's no deal struck before free agency. I think Jacob is looking for another one-way contract, so hopefully he gets it. He's a good guy, and I think he can fill like a seventh, eighth defenseman role for somebody on a one-way. But we'll see. If that market isn't there for him, then maybe he'll come back. And same with Carpenter too. But anyway, McDonald is definitely gonna. There's not gonna be a last minute deal, I think, for McDonald, from what I understand.
The Jacob McDonald hype train might be dead.
It's over. It's derailed.
It's derailed.
It's over.
I remember I read on Twitter today that Devin Cooley might be signing in Calgary as their third goalie. So anyway,
really. Yeah. I'm interested in a team giving him a number three spot, because I don't know if he has quite earned like that yet, you know. So yeah. Interesting.
I read it on Twitter. It's Twitter rumors the night before free agency, so who the fuck knows? It could be nothing.
Okay.
But that's what I had read. So all right, guys. We're gonna come back later this week with a free agency recap, probably. As well as trades or whatever the else hell happens. But and also development camp starts. Oh my God, there's so much shit going on. But it was a super
I won't be time. Doing it for an airport lounge though, so
yes, we will have more time and maybe the more less ASMR mic for next time as well.
Yes. Yes.
Hope you guys have a good week. Bye.
Bye guys.